It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We have talked before about the ways artificial intelligence is increasingly becoming part of our lives, in schools and universities, in writing computer programs, and potentially in politics. Today, we're going to consider a different angle on AI, one that hits closer to what we try to do every day here, and that is through the lens of journalism. There is concern about AI's potential negative effects on our information environment, like the potential for the spread of convincing but fake images and audio. But for those of us in this field, people also wonder about the potential for job loss, as well as plagiarism and copyright infringement. Here at the 21st Show, we have diverging views on these questions. I am an AI enthusiast, or maybe it'd be better to call me a hobbyist. I'm always testing out different models to see if they can be of use in my everyday life and work. I appreciate what I heard at a conference of public media journalists this summer from the writer and public intellectual Sebastian Mallaby. I'm going to paraphrase, but he said, "No machine has fully replaced a human, but humans who can operate the new machines do replace other humans." Some of my colleagues, however, are more skeptical of the utility and quality of AI and are more deeply concerned about its potential effects. A little later in the show, we'll talk with someone from a well-respected journalism training organization who co-authored an AI ethics guide for our field. But we begin today with Dr. Talia Ringer, an AI researcher and assistant professor at the Siebel School of Computing and Data Science at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. We're going to talk about how AI works and the implications of that for journalism. Talia, if I may, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
And listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation today. What do you think about AI in journalism? Are you worried about losing the human element of this work? Or maybe you see that's a potential positive, taking the human element out of it. Would you be more likely to trust or mistrust a news organization if you found out they were using AI in their work? I suppose maybe that would depend on how they're using it. But we want to know what you think about this. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, let's start with a big picture. And I want to start with this idea. People sometimes will say, you know, is AI being creative, right? It can generate a painting, or it can write a magazine-style story. From a computer science perspective, how do you think about that? Is there creativity happening there?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question because, you know, it kind of depends what you mean by creativity. I think that these tools can definitely, like, produce things that people would perceive as being creative, at least in theory. I think the way that they tend to, like, they're actually currently designed, there's much more of a tendency for them to sort of converge towards the mean. So, you know, if they see a lot of writing on the internet, a lot of it is going to be, like, pretty mediocre. So then you end
I'll
up with something
that... try not to take that personally.
Okay. No, I mean, it's not just looking at media. It's also looking at, you know, forums and
Reddit,
just everywhere
yeah,
that people write.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, there's a tendency for what comes out to be somewhat mediocre. There are ways that people, you know, are trying to work around that and improve it. I don't think we're quite at the point yet with writing where I would perceive personally the output as creative. But I think that might also be because I'm more attuned to kind of the products of writing. Whereas, like,
yeah,
you know, if
yeah.
I look at, like, the visual art that comes out of some of these tools, I don't know as much about visual art, and so a lot of times when I do look at those images, I'm like, wow, that's really good, like, that looks creative to me, whereas, you know, people who are visual artists will often tell me, it looks terrible, what are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I was talking to one of my colleagues this morning, and he said that some people say it's a tell that something was written by AI, I don't know if a student turns in an essay or something, if it has a lot of M dashes, right, those long dashes. Now, And he said that's because journalists use MDash. I use them all the time. So that I never noticed that as a tell because I love the MDash. I think it's a very useful part of speech. But, I mean, is that the sort of thing that, you know, when you say you're attuned to the creativity, you can see that? Or?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so the MDash, actually, that one makes me kind of sad because I'm also fond of it. You know, but there are certain tells. I mean, earlier than that, I think there was the word like delve would show up a lot.
Oh, delve. We're going to delve into that today. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
So there's sort of, there are things that just become common because they show up a lot in the data. I think they're also with like technical writing, the way that these things will generate words, it will often try to include kind of some diversity. It'll sample from what it has. And then actually for writing, this could end up being kind of bad because it will, so like for technical writing, you often want to reuse the same word to refer to the same thing because otherwise it gets really confusing. But these tools will kind of avoid using any of the same words. So you'll just have a synonym, another synonym in the next sentence, another synonym in the next sentence, and it's like so easy to get lost. I think it also will sound kind of overly flowery.
Yeah,
like a
this
lot.
This is a
of
phenomenon of like
nothing.
Of like if you read a sports report written by a new, like say a freshman on the college paper is writing sports, and they feel like they need a synonym for defeated every time. So it'll be like they blanked this team and they vanquished that one. And yeah, okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know what we say that like AI, you know, humans bring emotions and intention and our experiences into our creativity. Can AI do that? Does it have a thinking process as we think of it for ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, so I think I would say when it comes to like, I would say at first there was nothing even resembling that. Mm-hmm. Like the way a lot of these tools worked when they came out is like it was literally just. I mean, I've heard people refer to it as like glorified autocomplete, like looking at kind of what's the like next most likely thing that you could, you know, use to fill in the blank here and then, you know, do that. And it turns out if you throw enough stuff at it to train it, then, you know, it can look kind of decent and you know, do a lot more than we thought. I guess what I would say over the last few years, I've been surprised that how many things you can fit into glorified autocomplete. You're like clever about what you're telling it to complete. So I think that there is some creativity of like the user of the AI systems there. But sometimes people will build tools on top of them that will kind of prompt the models to like, you know, so-called like think through something. So that it will actually have a chain of thoughts. It's literally called chain of thought reasoning.
Yeah.
Or prompting to think through a problem. But I put think in scare quotes because it's impossible to know. Like it's really it looks like it's reasoning through something.
This. So if I type in something into, you know, one of these prompt windows, right? ChatGPT, say, and it says thinking. Is that just like fake? Is it just saying that to make me think it's thinking? What's happening there? What does that mean that it's thinking?
Yeah, it's not fake, but it's not like, you know, it's not literally like a, you know, a brain that's sitting there and thinking the way that we think. It's
they're stroking their chin. It's not. Yeah.
it's usually I would say like if you ever like write down kind of, I don't know, someone gives you a question that's hard to break down into something that you would immediately answer. And so you might like take out a scratch pad and you might write down some initial thoughts on it. And you might kind of write out your thought process of like, okay, well, how would I break this down? What should I do first? What should I answer first? And you know, then you can go through it and that will help kind of shape your response. And I would say like it produces text that basically does this. It's like the scratch pad that you would use when you're writing. And that's usually what it's doing when it's, you know, thinking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So some of the let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're talking about AI in journalism, and we're beginning by talking about AI and the idea of creativity. And we've been speaking with Dr. Talia Ringer, an AI researcher and assistant professor at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. You know, one of the things that people have been concerned about is there was just an article, I think yesterday, in the Wall Street Journal that said, you know, AI is affecting young people's ability to start off in the job market, that there are a lot of these sort of entry level jobs being replaced. And I've seen tools that this journalism conference I was at, it can monitor, sort of records an entire city council meeting, you know, where there's not a lot of journalists usually, processes the words and comes up with dot points of, you know, summarizing things that happen there. How reliable do you think is something like that? How worried should people be about, you know, those kind of jobs going away?
Yeah. So I would say it's like, at this point, it's fairly reliable, but then at the same time, it will fail once in a while, and you won't know when it's going to fail. And the fact that you won't know, like, when it's going to fail can cause a lot of problems, I think, because it might not be anything like the way a human would fail. So I think with people, we know how people think, and to some degree, and you know, we have an understanding of how things might go wrong when a human is doing something. What I found so far is that with a lot of these tools, they will fail in ways that don't at all resemble a way that a human would fail, and so people might not be on the lookout for that.
Oh, like what? Like what?
Yeah.
Is that like making things up? Is that where it, you know, because I did one of my earlier experiments. This was a year or two ago. It was like, help me find some experts on this, you know, relatively obscure topic who are based in Illinois, right? And it gave me some actual professors I'd never heard of and some professors that it invented from whole cloth. I think the hallucination thing has diminished over time a little, but I don't know what your experience is of that.
Yeah, well, I recently got an alert on Google Scholar that I had, you know, someone who had cited me, and I was really interested to read, you know, oh, okay, what was cited? And so I went in and I looked, and it was an article that I did not write.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, the article, like, I believe it something very similar existed, written by totally different people. So it was very clear there that was, like, I just wouldn't expect someone to just, you know, mess that up.
Yeah.
But yeah, also you know, when I've used these things for kind of programming or having them write, like, proofs, we've found that they will sort of learn, like, really cute shortcuts that people might not see. And so those shortcuts might be, like, you know, 95% accurate. And so they might work. But then, you know, because there are these weird shortcuts that we wouldn't think of, that 5% of the time, it might do something totally weird that we would never imagine.
Hmm.
Yeah. But I do use the summarization of capabilities, actually. So I mostly use them for things where I know I would be much worse. like summarizing really long emails to figure out what I need to do is something that I struggle with a lot. And I found that it's better than I am at that. But I don't think I'd be a good example of, you know, someone who should be hired for that.
I've also found if you want to be more on the courteous writing side of that email, you can, if you have a long email, you can run it through AI and say, you know, make this more readable to somebody who is very busy and doesn't have a lot of time to do it. And I don't know, it's useful for that purpose. We got an email from a listener, Lindley, who says, AI is not a very reliable source of information. Too often it's wrong or makes things up whole cloth. To rely on AI for news or really any information is foolhardy. It can never take the place of a human journalist. It can only get dumber in the future because of the massive amount of information in the world today. If people can't figure out how to parse their news and information for reliability and some basis in fact, how can AI learn to do it? What do you think? We've just got a few minutes left. What do you think of this idea of digital literacy and AI literacy? Is there a need for that? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a really extreme need for it. And I think that, you know, that it's very correct. Like there will be, correct to some degree, like there's going to be kind of misinformation. And then there is a cycle where the more content is produced by AI, the more it'll pick up on that and recycle it. At the same time, I will say, like, the people developing these systems are themselves pretty creative, and also sometimes, you know, also very literate in, you know, having the AI literacy, and they might be able to kind of build better systems in the future that are better at actually, you know, filtering out what's true and what's false. But I don't think that that has pragmatically happened recently. I think it's been a lot of like mass outsourcing of that task of like marking what's true and what's false to like low paid data labelers. And then
This is the human element that actually goes into improving these AI models.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, predictably you don't really get that. And
so I guess, you know, just about a minute left, as we're thinking ahead and, you know, I don't know what to believe when some people say, look, these models are hitting the limits of what we can sustainably do with them. We need to, like, think of a new, if we're really ever going to reach this idea of artificial general intelligence, where do you see things potentially, you know, 5, 10, 15 years down the line?
Yeah, I've always thought that that kind of notion of general intelligence is almost like the wrong thing to aim for. Like, you know, we're humans. We like tools. That's been our thing for like our entire existence. The thing that we should be thinking about is like, you know, how can we use these to build tools that will help us do the things that we want? And the thing that scares me is that sometimes the tools that we build will outpace like our economic system's ability to kind of keep up and support, you know, the people who are doing things without those tools. So that's something I think we do need to worry about, is that pace and the way that our kind of, you know, outside systems keep up to that. But yeah, I think we should be thinking about how those tools can help us and what we can do with them.
I like that idea that AI is just the latest iteration of the Pleistocene spear point or whatever, the human tool making progress. Tali Ringer is an AI researcher and an assistant professor at the Siebel School of Computing and Data Science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. Thanks for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
More to come. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are continuing our conversation on AI in journalism. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. If you're on the line, please hold on for a minute. We are going to get to some calls here very soon. But now we're going to turn to a different voice for the rest of our program today. Alex Mahadevan is a journalist and director of MediaWise, Poynter's digital media literacy project that teaches people of all ages how to spot misinformation online. He's also one of the co-authors of Poynter's first ever AI ethics guide. I should say, if you're not, Poynter is probably not a household name outside the journalism industry, but it is very well known and well respected as a sort of think tank and training institution for the field of journalism. Alex, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
So, what is your big picture view on AI and media today? Generally, are you optimistic, pessimistic? How are you thinking about this?
It really depends on what part of the day, I think, with AI. Sometimes I'm a super user, so I'm pretty optimistic about it. So the big picture is that AI intersects basically every aspect of what we do of journalism. It is changing the tools that we use to create journalism. AI is being integrated into content management systems, into our beloved Google that we use to search for information, and then distribution too. So the last Reuters Institute's digital news report said 7% of people are getting their news from chatbots now. So AI is affecting how we produce and how people consume news. Now, the reason I am pretty optimistic about it is because I've spent the last 2 years at so many journalism conferences and so many tangential conferences, and so many people are talking about this. And it reminds me It's kind of a counter to what I saw in the rise of social media, where you saw something that was coming in and upending the way people consume news and the way news was produced, but nobody was talking about it. We didn't have policies to navigate how to post on Facebook or eventually Instagram, and we at Poynter, I mean, we held our first big AI ethics summit, year and a half after ChatGPT came out, and so I'm optimistic because we're having these conversations and I see really cool things that newsrooms are doing with AI.
I want to go to the phones because we have a couple callers, at least one who's been waiting for quite a while now to ask. And I think these are great questions about AI and journalism. So Michael is calling from DeKalb. Michael, thanks for your patience. Thanks for calling in.
Hello.
Hi there. So
Hey,
what?
Michael.
What do you? What do? What are your concerns or questions about AI and journalism?
Well, I have two questions, and one is I'm assuming that there's still going to be a human involved. There always has been like an editor, and then you have a bunch of journalists, right? And then nobody's perfect. So journalists sometimes they might make a mistake or they might not communicate something so clearly. And then you have a human editor, which helps them out. So for that human editor, assuming that now you've got AI amongst the journalists, what would be the difference for that person, the human editor, in looking at what's produced by AI as opposed to what's produced by a human journalist?
Interesting question, Alex. I'll ping that over to you.
It's a thought-provoking question because there are some people who might say it shouldn't make a difference. I remember talking to some of the editors of the leading newspapers as we were building our ethics policy, and the AP launched its own AI ethics policy on guiding use back in 23. And some of the big papers didn't have them. And I remember talking to some of the AI leaders, and they were saying, well, listen, why do we need an AI specific policy when really our editor should be catching everything? Every use of AI should fall within traditional ethical journalism rules. So, what difference is it between an intern putting together, the calendar of events for the weekend that might have a bunch of errors in it, because they just started, versus using an AI tool? So, I think there are some people that would say, yeah, it's not, it really shouldn't make a difference. The editing process should be the same. There should be like very robust publishing workflows before anything goes online. I think the difference here, though, is that some t these tools are so confidently wrong that I think if you brought up AI literacy earlier, that if there isn't a really good push for AI literacy in newsrooms anywhere, really. I'm a big advocate for schools, is that there might be a little bit more trust of an AI tool putting together a calendar than an intern, and really there should not be, because as was mentioned earlier, these tools hallucinate and they are just so confidently wrong at times.
This is like Wikipedia, the early days. It strikes me that the early days of Wikipedia, right? You had to teach people, well, you don't necessarily take everything you read in Wikipedia at face value, although that's demonstrably gotten better over time. But what you can do is look at the footnotes and go to the original sources, which, of course, those can contain errors too. But setting that aside for the moment, that is where the utility came in. And I wonder if you think AI, especially now that a lot more of these tools give backlinks to where they're sourcing their information from.
Well, I love that you bring that up, because when I started at Poynter and I started at MediaWise, I was teaching students how to use Wikipedia to fact check. And basically, I was going to these schools and my teachers always told me, don't ever use Wikipedia for anything. But, Wikipedia is a great source that is a good starting point for fact checking, because the editing process is so robust and there are tons of links at the bottom of Wikipedia articles. So I would go into schools in 2019 and say, hey, here's how to use Wikipedia to fact check what you just saw on Snapchat. Now I'm going into schools and saying, hey, here's how to take this output that you got out of ChatGPT and make sure it's not, BS. Or here's how to ask the right question to one of these AI tools so you can get a better answer. And then here's how to fact check it yourself. It is annoying that we have to keep that technology is supposed to make our lives easier, but a lot of times we end up, having to fact check it a lot. But it's such an interesting parallel, because I've literally seen it play out in my work as a media literacy practitioner.
And I want to thank Michael for that call a moment ago. And he did have another question. He's not with us anymore, but he did ask about AI becoming a fact checker. I'd like to share just briefly. I was doing a political segment. This is probably a year ago now. And it was you've heard this formulation, right? You think of the 2016 presidential election and you say Hillary Clinton lost by X thousand votes in which states, right? She lost by, and I'm just going to make up the numbers, something like 70,000 votes in three states, right? And I said, take that and tell me how much President Biden won by in 2020. And this, I use the Perplexity AI, which holds itself out as more of a, you know, fact-based search engine type tool. And it gave me the results. I asked it to give me links where it sourced its information. I checked it meticulously, and it was right. And I wonder what you think of that as AI's potential as a fact-finding tool, as a fact-checking tool.
Well, they're getting better at fact-checking. So they study these models on benchmarks, you know, accuracy, speed, things like that. And I will say they are technically getting better. They're getting more accurate. But you know, I mean, the idea of human in the loop came up earlier, and that's paramount. There always has to be a human in the loop, but I do see AI being more incorporated into the fact-checking process. You know, for example, there are I built a tool internally here at PolitiFact that we use to a reporter can, it's not used a lot, it's a prototype, but reporters can drop an interview they did in or a transcript or something like that, and it will identify fact-checkable claims. Like, here's what you should look at. I created another tool that pulls a bunch of tweets from X, so they are posts on X, so they don't have to go to X. And it pulls those down and says, here, you should fact check these ones. And then I also made the fact checking database a little bit more searchable. So it makes the process of starting a fact check a lot easier. So these tools in concert with fact checkers can make truth telling on the internet a lot more efficient if employed in the right way. And, you know, it's as as these tools get more and more and more accurate, I could see a lot more uses, especially as, you know, I mean, Meta ending its partnerships with fact checkers earlier this year was a massive hit to the resources that we have in this industry. So, you know, can we fill the gaps with tools that are AI driven? Maybe. I wouldn't use it for whole hog fact checking, but it is certainly useful throughout the process.
Yeah. One of the other things I want to ask you about in the time we have remaining is this idea of trust in journalism. And I think there's a crisis of trust in journalism, certainly not alone in that. I follow this organization called Trusting News. They do great work in this area and trying to help people in journalism understand the crisis of trust and ways they can try and become more trustworthy with their audience. I wonder how you think of AI and whether that risks making it worse and what we should be doing about that.
So this is where AI literacy, I think, plays into things quite a bit. So what we've seen in a lot of research, and, you know, we did some research with the University of Minnesota, and actually Trusting News was at our first AI summit. And, you know, so we've been kind of talking about these trust issues for a while. And what the unfortunate thing we found is that it does not matter how good your reporting is or how engaging it is. If audiences see that you used AI, even if you're really transparent, you're very honest about how you used it, you risk trust, you know, because people, I think, they are immediately turned off by AI. And they're right to be. They see AI slop on Facebook. They see really boring, you know, hustle posts on LinkedIn. So I think there's this negative reaction whenever they see AI, even though it's incredibly useful in journalism. So where AI literacy plays in, and what Poynter has done a lot of, is trying to take a lot of, you know, the media literacy work that I've done and try to get journalists to start doing AI literacy in their work. So being more than transparent, explaining how AI systems work and create like engaging explainers to help people understand AI better. Because I think, you know, the more people understand how these tools work, yes, they'll understand the limitations and why you can't, you know, you don't want to put your, you know, your x-rays into ChatGPT like I did a couple of years ago. But you can also understand how they can be incredibly useful in journalism. So, I think undergirding the entire conversation we've had today is the need for fundamental AI literacy for kids, for older adults, for journalists. And I think journalists and journalism can be a really good entry point for getting people to understand how these systems work and how it can improve their lives, how using them wrong might be their make their lives worse off. So, we put together a toolkit to help newsrooms do that. So I hope to see a lot more coverage of the AI industry from that lens, a little bit more digging deeper into here's how these tools actually work.
Yeah. Last thought. What should everyday people do to arm themselves against the risk of AI? We keep being warned about the sort of the deep fake revolution is going to be coming and swamping our politics. I don't think we're quite there yet. I don't think we were there in 2024. Genuine ads had their own significant effects. Where do you see that going? And I should say we only have about a minute left.
Well, I just slow down. What I tell people is, on the disinformation side, the reason people fall for and share misinformation is because they're moving too quickly. They see something they like or hate, and they share it, they engage with it. And you see a lot of AI content online. So slow down like you would do, back in the scams of the 2018s and 2017s. And then what I tell people a lot is try to read and write for fun, because my fear is the AI disinformation, but also losing a little bit of our creative independence. So I'm forcing myself to read for fun a little bit more than I used to. So that's how I'd say you navigate this new AI world.
I love that. And that's good advice. I think just to piggyback off of what you said, if you are engaged, if you are outraged by some piece of content, maybe that is a trigger. That should be the thing that makes you take a moment to pause and think, is this real? Is this what we should be, what I should be sharing? Alex Mahadevan is a director of MediaWise at Pointer, also a journalist. Thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
That is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. And for the last time, I will say Leili Nazarova has been an associate producer. Leili was with us for a summer internship, and with the University of Illinois back in session, we are saying goodbye to her. She dove into the work a few months ago, quickly made herself a key part of our team, producing segments like the one you heard today on AI, another on the debate over crime-free housing rules, and collaborating on our coverage of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Leili, you have a bright future in journalism. Despite the bots, we wish you the best of luck. Our show's digital producer is Kulsum Khan, technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.